The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. We have Matt Muehlbach today from the Pac-12 Network. I'll talk with him about DeAndre Ayton and the Phoenix Suns and the breakdown of Ayton. Look at what's going on with the U of A, because Matt, of course, a former great Wildcat, and he's objective, which I like. I do not like cheerleaders, okay? I do not like PR people that cannot look themselves in the mirror and say, wow, we have problems here, and we don't want anybody to talk about it, as the U of A has done here over the last 3 months. So I like having Matt come on, and he's always very good. He's always very fair. So I have Matt Muehlbach. That comes up in about 10 minutes. Goody at the movies. Bill has seen Solo. Is it any good or not for all you Star Wars fans? Solo is here. Jordan is in today for Eric. Have you seen, do you have an interest in seeing Solo at all?
I'll probably end up seeing it this weekend.
You're a Star Wars nerd, right?
I wouldn't call myself a nerd.
What would you call yourself?
A movie nerd.
A movie nerd.
Enjoys going to the movies.
Do you go with you have a girlfriend who's very sweet, very nice. She's in the profession. Is she right there with you, or does she kind of go along as your friend?
She
just hangs out.
She is very hit and miss on movies. So a lot of times I'll go by myself and just
go to movies by yourself.
Yeah, it's great.
Guys, how many people go to movies by themselves?
Have you gone to a movie by yourself?
Never.
It's amazing. It's so
great. What are
you
talking about?
Because you're watching a big screen anyway. It's not like you're going to be talking to the person.
What do you mean? You're by yourself. You don't have anybody to go.
You got your big bag of popcorn. And
it's sad.
You don't have to share. It's great.
Jared's wife goes to the movies?
Jared's wife goes to the movies by herself as well.
Wow. I don't want to rip on Jared's wife. She is a saint to put up with him. So what's that all about? So
give it a shot.
So you're going to go
just
to Solo,
before,
huh?
Before you move on.
You're going to go Solo to Solo?
I'll probably go Solo, yeah.
All right. Knock yourself out. You going to dress up? Be one of those people?
No.
Lightsaber and all that?
If I were, I'd dress up as like a Lord of the Rings character just to
Wookie.
Mess with them.
Really?
No.
Never once seen those. Never once. All right. So good he's going to be with us. I really don't want to go down the Anthem path for the whole show like we did yesterday. Eric and I were talking after yesterday's show. He wasn't very happy. And he's not here today, so I can just rip him to shreds. There's days where we'll do a show and I'll feel really good coming out and he'll just be like, meh. And of course, there's days where I'm just like, I blow. Like yesterday, I blew. I could not talk yesterday. I was distracted. Stuff going on. I don't know. It wasn't good. So Matt Muehlbach and then Goody at the Movies, and we'll talk about Solo. And I'm not going to do Anthem stuff for the whole show today like I did yesterday. Last night, I made the decision to – and by the way, if you're like, wow, he's pretty casual today. I was golfing this morning at 6 a.m. It was business. I don't screw around. It's a Thursday. You got to work at it. I was doing business stuff. I was having conversations with radio executives and all that stuff. Over at Papago, and it was fun. It was great. It was great to be out there. I was out yesterday at a local establishment with my wife, the girl that I sleep with for the last 28, 29 years, whatever it is, and the 13-year-old who's 6'4", 270 pounds. So he was hungry. So went to that cold beer and cheeseburgers. Jordan, you ever been to that place?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a regular at the Scottsdale location.
That place is... I think we got to talk to them about getting on board here, because I'm sitting there yesterday, and it's packed.
Yeah.
It's packed. The sports bar industry, it used to be that Marley's was the only place to go to. Dan had it figured out with his crew back in the day. And now you go into any place. You can go into a Subway, and they have TVs on. Mm-hmm. Every place has TVs on nowadays. It's just kind of changed. Sports bars are everywhere.
And the thing about cold beers and cheeseburgers, or CBCB as the kids call it,
is that what you call it?
It'll be a Monday night. Sometimes. Yeah. It'll be a Monday night. It'll be a Tuesday night. Still packed. It could be, you know, your typical Diamondbacks game at one of 162, and it's usually pretty full.
Is it the one they win?
I can't say for the last couple of weeks
so
whether
bad.
That's been the case.
All right, so I'm at cold beer and cheeseburgers with my wife and my son, and the Capitals game is on. And I wanted to see Game 7. Game 7s in any sport, to me, it's what it's all about. It's what you live for. It's kind of like the AFC and NFC championship games in the NFL, to me, are must-see TV. And the Super Bowl, I can DVR and go to Disneyland because no one will be there on Super Bowl Sunday because no one's thinking about Disneyland on Sunday. And I can just Go back and watch the game afterwards. Little trade secret. So I'm watching the Capitals, and they have the brawl yesterday. There's brawl, two big dudes that are going at it. The whole place is going crazy. In the meantime, the Celtics and Cavaliers are playing at the same time. These two guys get into it, and on the ice, they get sent off. They get out of the penalty box, and they just go right back at each other and do it again. It was terrific. It was awesome. And the Capitals win. So here we have, and this is going to have a little bit of political tone to it, and it's intentional because I started getting this from people last night. We have Washington, D.C., which there's a lot of people that aren't happy with what's going on in the White House. And I'm just kind of like, okay, maybe there's some good things that are going on in the White House. I'm not going to sit here and throw my politics into what's going on in the sports world. But nonetheless, I'll play along with this. So the Capitals make it in. It's D.C. Somebody tries, or a few people try to try in the Trump thing. And then it goes to D.C. against Vegas, where gambling has just been legalized across the country. And, well, it hasn't yet, but it's coming. Sports betting is coming. It's not there yet, but I understand where you guys are trying to leap on this. Two evils all tied up in one. Well, I guess if you're one of those that's against what's going on in D.C. or in our country in some views, yeah, I can see your Trump analogy. Sure, knock yourself out. Others would say, no, I'm better off having Trump and how things are going. It's just I don't hear from that group as much. So to me, having the Caps and the Golden Knights on Monday night will be must-see TV. I'm actually more interested in that. I tried watching Celtics and Cavs last night. I really did. That was a hard watch last night. That was not a pretty game last night. You know, Boston ends up winning, and Jason Tatum has 24. If you've been following the NBA hardcore all season, you know about Jason Tatum. But most of the people that were there last night in this establishment that were watching the, between the Caps winning and the Celtics and Cavs, if LeBron was doing something, they were into it. And LeBron wasn't doing something last night. In fact, LeBron was guzzling water, and LeBron looked like that he was tired from the people that I was hearing around. Oh, LeBron looks spent. LeBron looks beat up. No, it felt like Cleveland was never in this game last night. That's what it felt like to me. In the Celtics, it wasn't pretty to watch. Boston shot 36% from the floor, and they won. 36% from the floor, and they controlled the game. That's not good basketball. Now, you may say, well, what do you see over in Houston Golden State, Brad? They're not playing much defense. I thought the last game was pretty darn competitive. That's what I want to see. That series primarily has been nothing but blowouts. LeBron had 26, and it's like, what's wrong with LeBron? He had 44 the night before. The issue that I'm seeing with LeBron for a lot of people is they're just kind of used to him getting 40 points a game and think that it's just the way that he's supposed to be. Instead, how about what a more remarkable accomplishment by LeBron in game number four, was it, that he had 44 points? It's the eighth time in his career that he scored 40 or more against the Celtics. Why are we not celebrating that more? Because it's not what people in our profession want to focus on all the time. Last night, I just didn't think it was a very well-played game. It was a grinded out. I see Marcus Morris get into a shoving match, and I just look at him and say, man, I saw that act here in Phoenix, but Danny Ainge wants grit, guys. You got to have grit, guys, but you can't have Marcus and Markieff here in Suns uniforms at a time when the franchise was beyond deplorable. Not that they're much better now, but at least they have the number one pick. I can't stomach that stuff. Marcus Morris is kind of like when Danny Ainge was on the Kings before he came to the Suns. He's one of those players you love to hate. And then he comes on your team. It's like, yeah, that's what I need. I need a grit guy. I need a glue guy, like Brad's saying. The two Marcuses last night for Boston, Marcus Smart and Marcus Morris, were really, really good. So the playoffs, to me, I thought the NHL last night won hands down. Hands down. I'm hearing Ovechkin talk afterwards, and he's the group picture, the shaking of the hands. Two guys that were beating the snot out of each other during the game are sitting there shaking hands, patting each other on the belly afterwards, like, yeah, it's just part of the game, part of it. And that's what makes it so good. Matt Muehlbach here in about 4 minutes, but first, we'll finish the segment with the Diamondbacks. So I don't know, guys. I can't see this team coming out of the free fall anytime soon when you look up and down their lineup. And the batting average is not that great. I can't see this team coming out of, and I'm being nice here on that, I can't see this team coming out of the funk anytime soon when I see their starting pitching being average to below average. Corbin throws tomorrow night at Oakland. Corbin has been really good for about the first 5 weeks, and lately they figured him out. Zach Godley gets shelled yesterday. The rotation, they're hoping Shelby Miller is back by the middle of June. He's getting close to being back. Are these reinforcements going to keep them from completely going underwater? They're out of first place now. Slumps happen, but this is more than a slump. There's something going on internally. I've had people theorize that when Souza came back, it screwed up the chemistry and the team's never been the same. I don't see that because he's been hurt again. AJ Pollock, he gets hurt too much, can't rely on him. It's true that he gets hurt, can't sit here and say because he laid out for a ball that that's the reason why that he's injury prone and he's brittle. I don't buy into that side of the argument. Jake Lamb's just now coming back. I want to see what Jake Lamb can do here the next few weeks. I can't tell you why Murphy is not the everyday catcher, at least close to being the everyday catcher, and that Avila is still on the roster. I get it. They want to be loyal. They want to be consistent with their players, and the message is that they're going to pull themselves out of this. But I guarantee stinking tea in you, at some point, Ken Kendrick is going to call from Colorado and say, let's get this figured out. What is happening? It's going to happen. You can put out all the happy faces, and you can be the president of the team in Derek's case, and the sky's not falling. That's been Derek's MO from day one. At some point, fans are going to look at this and say, guys, it's one thing to lose 6-7. It's another to lose 13-14. And to be honest, even before the skid started, there was some luck along the way. And you have to have that during the course of a season. You really do. Opening comments brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. That means life insurance. When was the last time you just sat and took a long, hard look at your situation? Or even just you're hitting a different space in life, you're growing up, you're getting into your late 20s, into your 30s, into your 40s, wherever it is, and you've never done anything in terms of life insurance. Life comes at you fast. Make sure you log on and get your free quote online at Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. Matt Muehlbach is next. Later, Good Eat the Movies on a Thursday. I'm Brad Sussmat. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, and of course our television show, Brad Sussmat Football AZ, 16 airings a week over on Fox Sports Arizona on all of our platforms. Turn our attention now back to the Suns. NBA draft less than a month away. Everybody's got an opinion whether to trade the number one overall pick for Karl Anthony Towns or keep the number one pick, take DeAndre Ayton, trade down, move left ways, move sideways. To make sense of all of this, in all seriousness, is Matt Muehlbach, former U of A guard, now Pac-12 network analyst. And we've had Matt on several times, a good friend of the show. We appreciate him jumping on board. How are you?
Doing great, Brad. Thanks for having me on again.
No, no worries. No worries. If you are Ryan McDonough, Matt, what are you doing with the number one overall pick in the NBA draft in less than a month?
Easy, right? Well, I think you nailed it. I think you got to look at all those options. Trading is certainly something I think that I would always consider if I had the top pick. Of course, you got to figure out, you know, what you're going to get for it. And then you got to look at if you can't get it, you know, who are you going to pick? And I know there's a lot of talk with Doncic and Ayton right now. I've had a tough time. You know, trying. I'll say this out of full disclosure. I have not watched Doncic live. Mm-hmm. I've seen him a little bit on tape, but I've seen Ayton live, and I've been around him a lot. I was around him a lot this year, this past year with Arizona, and I unless you get great trade value for him, I have a hard time thinking I wouldn't draft him just because of the unicorn, you know, type things you're thinking about with him, the combination of the size, you know, the athleticism and the skill. I mean, I can't think of anybody that I've seen like that in a really long time. And now, you know, there's the intangibles is what would be the key for me, right? Which is, you know, meeting him and figuring out, you know, does he want to be great? You know, how much does he I mean, does he want to win championships? Those type of things would be critical, obviously. And those are things that we won't get to do. But, you know, the top two or three picks we'll get to do. And then you see a lot from that. But I can say the times that I was around him, you know, he had a great personality. Seemed like he really cared about winning. And I'll tell you, the one example I give is, you probably remember when Arizona went up to play at Oregon, up in Eugene, and that was the night that all that stuff kind of came out, you know, the NCAA stuff, and, you know, there was a bunch of media reports on Sean, and then, you know, potentially Ayton's name being involved, and his name was obviously cleared after that by him and his family and the attorney, but, I mean, the way he played and reacted, you know, that day on Saturday, I thought was telling. That he was mad. You know, he was really upset that his name was being put out there, and he played like it. And to me, you know, kind of having that type of a killer instinct, that's what I'd be looking for.
Matt Muehlbach with us. That's really good stuff there. If you were to parse away from basketball and drill down a little bit more on student of the game and understanding of the game, because he is only 19, and where it is basketball length has not been that many games. He really hasn't played that many games, Matt, when you look at his body of work, and yet he's come so far. His understanding of the game, is it there? Did you see it grow as this season went under Sean?
You know, I'd say yes and no. Offensively, I think it's there. And to me, that's the irony, is that, you know, for someone that hasn't played a lot, normally what you would see is a guy like, you know, Dikembe Mutombo or something, where he's really good defensively. He uses his length, his size, you know, the athleticism, but doesn't have the offense yet. You know, he's learning it, trying to figure it out. And it's just, to me, it's just ironic that he would, you know, it doesn't make sense that someone that hasn't played a lot would be that good offensively and skilled. And he's a great passer. He's a really willing passer. You know, he passes out of double teams. He can handle it. And I think the NBA will totally open his game up even more. I mean, I think, you know, college and the way it's played and the way you can kind of support guys down low and play zone and other things, you know, limits his offense. And even with that, you know, you could see the offense and you see the stroke, you know, the shooting stroke and how far he can take it out. I mean, he wasn't, you know, a dead eye 3-point shooter, but he's got range and he'll get there. But so to me, the irony was that defensively he wasn't there yet. You know, he was a good defender. I mean, I think he played hard for the most part. He struggled, you know, at times against, you know, real small guys, but he was pretty good on the pick and roll.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for him, it was great because he played the four. You know, they had Ristich at the five, so he's playing the four in positions that he's going to play in the NBA, where he's got to really come out and guard guys, you know, way out and hedge screens and stuff like that. But, you know, his awareness and kind of, like, I think back to guys like that I grew up with, Patrick Ewing, you know, and just that natural ability to block shots, you know, Alonzo Mourning, and just, like, just defensive forces. And, you know, Lauren Woods for Arizona, I mean, he had games where he blocked, I think, 13 shots and had unbelievable length and timing and all of those things. DeAndre's not there yet defensively, and that's going to be one of the questions. You know, can he get there?
Mm-hmm.
Can he be a really, you know, force on the defensive end? And obviously he has the size, though. He's got like a 7'4", I think, wingspan. And his, you know, what's crazy about his leaping ability, I mean, he was the best jumper on Arizona's team. If you give him a step, he had the best vertical on their team last year as a 7-footer. It's you know, it's crazy.
It's funny, Matt, because I'll hear the knock on Ayton is he doesn't block enough shots, block just mm-hmm. over two, almost three a game. Okay, that's one side of it. When you talk about defensively trying to learn it, is he a kid? I'll give you an example. Different position, but still a big man who came into the league. Marquise Chris can't get out of his way in terms of foul trouble. It's 19 mm-hmm. minutes and he's fouling out of games. I'm not using them as a comparison, but I'm just simply wondering, is Ayton a foul machine waiting to happen in the NBA? Is he somebody that is that far behind the curve? Or he's really not that far off in the block shots, Brad. It's just a matter of timing and learning more game.
You know, that's a good question. I mean, and if I think about it, I don't have the stats in front of me. He was my recollection was really good not fouling. I think he may have fouled out of two or three games, maybe, is what I recall. And he was not in foul trouble a ton. I mean, just watching the games, he was pretty good about it. Now, you might say, well, maybe he needs to be more aggressive and trying to block shots and have a few more fouls. I think, you know, the hardest thing for him, and this is a lot, you know, a lot of kids, too, at that age. I mean, just off the ball, you know, and that's where you look at guys like, you know, watching the Pac-12 the last few years, a guy like Jordan Bell, who was so phenomenal at blocking shots. Mm-hmm. I mean, he got most of his blocks on coming from the weak side. You know, he would come off his man and get guys that didn't really suspect it. You just didn't think he could cover the ground. And it wasn't like he would get them on the ball. Where DeAndre, a lot of his were just kind of on the ball. He'd face up and, you know, turn around and the guy would shoot and he'd block it because he could just jump. And it's more about understanding how to come from the weak side, help defense, you know, all of those things. The positioning of it, I think, is where he'll need to learn and get a lot better. You know, of course, the NBA, I know some of it, too, is just one-on-one. And so, you know, there's some of it where you can't help. And college, you know, there's a ton of helping. And, you know, you're playing – Sean Miller played a pack line defense where they play the help defense. And at times, you know, he struggled in that area a little bit. But he like I said, I mean, that's – I'm looking for a place to knock him.
Right, so right. Now we're splitting hairs.
I'm being hypercritical just, you know, for the point of this discussion.
Yeah. You know, we're splitting hairs. I don't have many hairs to split, so I get it. well, I've got you on the phone. So there's a lot made, obviously, about the report that you alluded to earlier. People had wondered about Sean's future, that the program was going to go into the abyss. Sean has all these openings. Well, Sean's still there. He has gone out and he has filled most of the openings from what I've seen, read, heard. What is the state of the program from your point of view as we're sitting here in May? This is not the focal point of the year per se, but I think for U of A, it's very important year round now to see where they are, given what happened last September with an assistant leaving to where we are today.
Yeah, and I think part of that was the way the season ended. And, if you look back, the Pac-12 tournament, you know, they were on high. They won the league. They won the tournament. They're rolling. You just kind of thought, okay, if they can make a run and they've got Ayton and these good players maybe get to the Final Four, you know, maybe some of that is behind them and, you know, unless something came out again. But and then I think what happened was that loss was just – kind of shocking to everybody, mm-hmm. that first round loss, and so people started wondering what's going to happen. And you know, then the two or three recruits, I think there were a couple recruits that decommitted, and then it, as you said, it looked like it was, you know, it was going nowhere. And all of a sudden, you know, Sean signed a really good 4 or 5 star a couple weeks ago. He'd already signed a few guys that looked like really solid players. You know, they don't have — now, this is interesting because I've heard people say, well, maybe Arizona needs less of the 5-star one-and-done guy. You know, they've had a couple of those and haven't gotten to the Final Four. Well, they don't have that now. So yeah.
And I was one – full disclosure, I was one of those that has said, you know, that method has not worked. Maybe he does need to go a different direction. And it's not that you don't stay – it's not you don't go after DeAndre Ayton. That's not what I'm suggesting. It's just – know that when you go get Stanley Johnson, and know that when you down the list of guys, that this is how it usually goes. They're going to be gone, and if you're not winning championships, maybe you should go a different direction. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, Villanova. I mean, Villanova has been really good about getting kind of 3, 4, and maybe a 5-star, you know, mixed in there, and you know, developing guys and seeing guys that are going to be good players, and he's done such a great job. So, mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of argument for that. And, you know, there's only so many guys to go around that you can get. I mean, Kentucky seems to get 4 or 5 of those guys every year. And after that, you're only talking about, you know, maybe 1 or 2 left, maybe 3 or 4. And Duke's all of a sudden now, you know, signing guys that fit that mold. So it's difficult if you don't get 3 or 4. If you get 1, that does make it tough. You know, you'd think if you could mix them in with the veterans, it would, you know, you would have a chance at really making it work. You know, I think for Arizona, part of the problem has been, you know, just a couple years ago when they had Markin, and they had a really good team. I thought they had a team to easily make the Final Four. They just kind of, you know, played really poorly against Xavier. And Xavier was better than I think people knew, you know, at the time, and probably was seeded lower. But, you know, they kind of dropped the ball in the tournament, and that's what happens. Last year, I think the problem last year was just there was so much turmoil, you know, yep. and so much going on. It was a tough – it was just they had so many ups and downs, and the chemistry was not great. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't perfect, and I think with all the ups and downs, you know, that probably looking back on it maybe explained the early exit.
Yeah, that's good stuff there. Hey, I appreciate your time and insight as always, Matt. Thanks for being on board with us.
Yeah, thanks, Brett.
See you later. It's Matt Muehlbach. Good stuff. Former U of A guard, now Pac-12 network analyst on DeAndre Ayton and also where U of A is here in the offseason. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. We'll have Goody at the Movies here shortly. I'm not sure how long we're going to be able to keep Bill today because he's out of screening, and I'm not sure what the screening is. But nonetheless, Goody at the Movies, as we do every Thursday. Solo is coming out. I don't know if there's any good or not. I don't know if the guy that's replacing Harrison Ford, you know, the backstory of Chewie, I don't know. But we'll talk to Bill. That comes up here momentarily. So the Cardinals in the and actually just the NFL. I shouldn't even focus in solely on the Cardinals. But yesterday, I found that most people were just dang sick of hearing about the Anthem protest. And usually what that means is it's front and center. When it comes to sports, there's topics that we will talk about here on the show, or that we'll kick around back in the bullpen, or that we'll just text back and forth about this or that. The Anthem protest, the way that it was handled yesterday by not having the players' union out front saying this is what we have decided to do together, reinforces my belief system that it is always about the owners. The owners are going to tell the players what they should and shouldn't do. And they will treat players as pieces of meat. That is how it works in professional sports. You want to go down this path, they're the owners, you are not. However, I think the players usually get the short end of the stick on a lot of things or get screwed, if I'm going to be more direct. When it comes to players' health, I've been very forthright about that on this show. There's guys I will not put on this show anymore, or I won't put them on the TV show on Fox because they would embarrass themselves because the CTE has gotten so bad. I don't want to put a guest on this show that you would know, a very big name, and there's many of them around the Valley that are a very recognizable name that would be lost. They've sat here and I've taped interviews and they just kind of go off and we don't get them back. Or if we do get them back, it's 30 seconds later and it's, oh, I'm so sorry. And then they're embarrassed. And I'm not going to do that. I'm just not. When it comes to the Anthem thing, it's a little different though. Donald Trump says the NFL is doing the right thing with a policy banning kneeling during the national anthem. I think that's good, Trump told Fox and Friends in an interview. Like to see Trump show up on some different networks, though, that may not just be saying, yes, 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 you're always right, you're always right. I don't think people should be staying in the locker rooms, but still, I think it's good. I would disagree with the president on that. There are players all the time that I see at anthems that are just kind of looking at the ground and swaying back and forth, and they've got their mind focused on the game and what's at hand. There's not every player, as Pedro Gomez said yesterday on our show, when you go to a baseball game, it's not like people count who's out on the field. There's guys that are downstairs that miss the anthem. It's going to happen. In the NFL, if players come out on the field, if only 20 Arizona Cardinals come out for a national anthem, are there going to be fans in the stands that are saying, boo those guys that didn't come out? I don't think so. I don't think that scoreboard watching is going to happen when it's who's out on the field and who's not. I thought it was very interesting, though. The NFL just said, this is what we're doing. Deal with the Players Association. Jordan was out at the Cardinals yesterday, and he went into the locker room on this subject, and here is one of the Cardinals that he found on it.
I still don't like it. You know, you're going to find guys for really expressing how they feel. I think that's kind of backwards, but it is what it is. You know, we did give an option for guys to stay in the locker room. So I think it's just comes to a point where now
Depends on the clubs, how they're going to handle it. Depends on the individuals, how they see fit. So, you know, you're going to have some guys that's going to stay in the locker room. And then, you know, just a matter of just seeing if guys can come out and take a knee still. So I just don't like the fact that you're going to find guys for really expressing what they believe in. But, you know, players really don't get too much say-so in matters like this.
We're going to say, many of you are going to say, well, that's just the way it works. They're employees. The owners have the teams. But I look at the way that social justice or social injustice in people's view, and I believe there is social injustice, and that is at the heart of why the players are protesting. I don't know if every player knows why they're protesting. Some of the quotes I've seen are a little backwards, but social injustice, when you see a player with the Milwaukee Bucks getting tased and the video comes out and police brutality, and I'm going to go down some paths some of you don't like, tough. When you see those topics being addressed and they don't feel as though, they being the players, that they are not being addressed in a fashion that is acceptable, or that there is not a voice that is listening, that's just the way it is. They're going to try to find ways with their platforms. That's how it's been through sports, in particular the NBA. The NBA is far further ahead than the NFL is on this subject. I like the fact that Steve Kerr can sit there and address social issues just as easily as Greg Popovich addressed social issues. And now I see where college coaches are doing it. I see where baseball managers are starting to step out. Down in Houston, I saw where there was some really good stuff that was being put out there over the last mass school shooting of enough of the thoughts and prayers and let's just do something about this. And everybody's frustrated, obviously. The kneeling of the anthem, is that the biggest issue that's going on in sports? Well, yesterday in the NFL, it actually got more traction than the Super Bowl being awarded to Phoenix. So I get it. There's going to be people that want to focus on that. I just look at that subject and say, when we come to the season opener for the Arizona Cardinals, I am not going to be scoreboard watching when they take the field against the Washington Redskins when it really matters. I don't care about football in August. And any of you that care about football in August, that's your prerogative. It's the biggest ripoff in all of sports. End of statement. Goody at the Movies is next. I'm Brad Sussmat. And Bill has a screening. So we're going to be short and sweet with Bill Goodykunz, Goody at the Movies. Just cut me off when you have to go into the screening. We have like what, five minutes?
I've got time for you. No, they're gonna let me slip in after. That's fine.
Oh, okay, all right. So you're fine. I know it's urgent for you, because I do need enough time to find out, does Solo stink, or is it really? I was supposed to go to a screening. You do this for a living. I kind of looked at it and said, I'm not doing this. Solo debuts. Is this any good?
It's any good. It's one of those things where it's well made, and it's somewhat exciting and adventurous and all that stuff, and it is absolutely inessential. There is no reason for this movie to exist other than, you know, it's sort of a stopgap between the latest Star Wars movies, which is, you know, and you can sort of tell that because it comes out in May instead of December, like the others have. But I mean, that said, there's some interesting stuff in it, and it's a prequel, right? It's like how Han Solo becomes Han Solo. And you think, well, what's new? We know all this stuff, right? But there's some surprises and stuff. And all the Star Wars people will, I think they'll love it. They may hate it because it may not, a few of the legends about Han Solo get kind of busted here. But other than that, it's all right.
Okay, so the Han Solo in this one, Is he a Han Solo that's got the dark side of what happened with his mom and his dad and all of that stuff? Is that, you get answered here in this? And this guy's not Harrison Ford, so, you know, how's this Han Solo?
Like you say, he's not Harrison Ford.
That answers that.
And few are, but I mean, the thing that he does well, though, or I don't know if he does well, but the thing he does intelligently is he doesn't try to exactly be him. They say some of the stuff, and certainly you get his backstory and you learn how he comes to be who he is. And, you know, like any of these things, like any of these prequels, it's sort of retrofitted to match up with the story that we already know. I mean, that's always going to be the case with the, you know, if it was an original story, maybe they would have taken it in a slightly different direction. I don't know.
So you like this. There's just no point to this of being made. It's like the Poseidon adventure. The boat sinks. Or Titanic, right? I mean, that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm interested to see how this will do. I assume it'll do really well the first week. But I am sort of curious to see how it will go. Like, will the really, you know, real Star Wars fans, are they going to latch onto this thing? Because even some of them have said, you know, what is the point of this? Why do we have this movie?
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting to me to see how they latch onto it and whether they, you know, kind of keep it afloat.
All right, let's move off from that then to First Reformed. This is Ethan Hawke, correct? And it looks dark. Yes. It looks very dark, Bill.
It is, and it's great. I loved it. It's about Ethan Hawke. He was an army chaplain, and now he's a minister of this little sort of fading church. It's more of a museum. It was a stop on the Underground Railway, and it's been sort of overtaken by this giant mega church. And he has this sort of crisis of faith when a woman comes to him and asks to counsel her husband. And I thought it was fantastic. It's one of those things that's hard to explain to you why it's so good, but the performances are great, and it's just, I really liked it. And it's Paul Schrader, who wrote Taxi Driver.
Mm.
And I spoke to him. I had a great interview with him, and then I lost it.
I had
to go back and do it again. And, of course, they do, you know, 50 of these things. He doesn't remember me. But he says, I said, hey, I'm having to do this a second time. I'm talking to you a second time because I lost the first one. He's like, oh, no. He said, well, just tell me what you want me to say. What do you want me to say? I said, it's not going to work like that. And then we got to the end of it. And he said, well, I hope this one works because I don't want to do it a third time.
That's funny.
But it comes back to a lot of the themes that Schrader has. It's got a lot of the sort of feel of a Taxi Driver to it, which doesn't make a lot of sense, I know, to try to say, just in discussing it, about a film about a preacher. But it does. I really liked it.
All right. And this is at Camel View. So it's got the artsy feel. Is this long? You know, I'm always wanting to know if I'm going to put 2 hours and 20 minutes into something, if it's worth
no,
it.
No. This is less than 2 hours. This is, I believe it's, about an hour and an hour and 40 minutes, something like that.
All right. I can stomach that.
That's a good investment of your time.
No. And it's artsy. We need to support that. All right. Yeah. Last one, on Chesil Beach. Did I pronounce that correctly? On Chesil Beach?
You did.
All right. And what about this movie?
It's good. It is so sad. It's so sad. It's like depressing. But Saoirse Ronan and Billy Howell play a newlywed couple in 1962 on their honeymoon, and it does not go as expected. Which it does not. It's not like a horror movie or anything. It's nothing like that. But it just, things don't go the way that she planned or that he planned. And it's interesting because these two are also a couple, sort of, in a movie that comes out next week called The Seagull. It's the Anton Chekhov play. It's a movie version of that. But the thing about this is Saoirse Ronan is just good in anything. I mean, she can do anything. I'm always down to watch her. She's fantastic. But, boy, is this a sad, sad movie.
So am I taking my wife to this and she's crying at the end?
I think so, probably.
Yeah.
either that or you are, because she's mad at you for taking it.
I had that moment last night where I walked in and she's watching the end of Toy Story, and I just hear this, and then this blubbering, just like, what are you doing? We know about Toy Story. It's about kids. So that's not this, obviously, but she's a crier.
I'll tell you, I was very proud of my kids because when we first saw the Toy Story 3, my oldest daughter, who's now about to turn 20, but she, like, you know, however old she was, she cried at the right part, which was not, I mean, it's sad at the end when he goes off to college, but the real sad part was before that, when they're heading for the incinerator, and she looks around, and she's like, what do we do? What do we do? And Buzz just holds out his hand.
Yeah.
And it's just like, we'll go down together.
We'll go down together.
And she was just like,
Yeah. I don't know what to do when it's a crying wife of 29 years and it's Toy Story. It's just rough. What are you seeing today? Can you say?
I'm seeing a studio is in town showing me a bunch of glorified trailers for some of their movies.
That's
which
weird.
I always complain about because I try to stay away from trailers. But, you know, This is what you call source management, I guess.
Ah. If I were at that, would I like this? That sounds painful. Like, what do they show? How many trailers?
If you like extended trailers, you would.
Oh, my gosh.
Looks like there's about 10 or 11 of them.
Oh, my God. That's you need to have Novocaine with you? Come on. That's dental surgery. Wow. All right. Well,
that's why I can go longer. I don't feel the need to rush right now.
Right. We're going to close the door on you. Please close the door on me. Yeah. All right. I'll let you go off that. Thank you for your time, as always.
All righty.
There's Bill Goodikins, Goody at the Movies. Hey, how was work today? Well, I went to a theater, and I sat down, and I watched 12 trailers. And then I've got to write about it and review it. That's an interesting gig. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. If you're just joining us, the stream repeats over and over and over throughout the next 24 hours. Our chairman of the board, as always, is Jaron Nielsen. He is the Iron Man, and Jordan Hamm today has been in the hot seat for Eric. Eric is out at GCU. Haley Stasiak, I don't know where she is. She's out doing something. And we have a brand new batch of interns next week that we'll bring on board on the show and make fun of. So enjoy your day.